The following program is brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, and the views expressed may not necessarily reflect the views of this station.
We have a great lineup of calls on today's program. We're going to talk to someone who is an angel investor.
We're also going to talk to a gentleman that has precious metals in his portfolio, and apparently not so precious.
Yeah, and some other good calls. Stick around.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
So glad you joined us today, both myself and my co-host. We're both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. This means we're practicing financial advisors, working with people like yourself throughout the week, and we are here on the weekends to be your financial advisor on the air. And we cover a variety of financial topics.
Such as? Tell me more, Scott.
Please, keep me engaged so I don't turn the channel. No, I mean, our goal is to help people make the most out of their finances, to get to a point where maybe work is an option and not an obligation, so they have some sort of financial independence in their life, and help the people make wise choices with their money. But the best choices for them, not for anybody else.
Everyone is at a little bit different stage. So people calling the radio show that are just starting, there's people that are halfway through their careers and are asking questions about, you know, what should I be doing to prepare for retirement, earnestly preparing for retirement. Young people asking about life insurance, wills, and trust. People that are going just days or weeks ahead of retirement want to know if they have enough or is this the right thing. By the way, if you're a week away from retirement, you might want to get on that. And even later in life, which is people in their 70s or 80s that want to know what happens with these monies, when their dollars or their net worth when it goes downstream. Yeah. So it's across the whole gamut.
Yeah.
And we see clients across the whole gamut.
And if you'd like to be part of the program, have a question for us, we'd love to take your call here at Hanson McLean. To join us, 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON, 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, that number is 1-888-242-6766. And let's start off with Mary in the Bay Area. Mary, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi there.
Yes, hi, Mary.
When you do angel investing, is it better to do it through your own personal account and handle the tax that way? Or is it better to set up a C Corp and do it through a C Corp?
Mary. Are you doing angel investing?
Yes.
And have you done angel investing? Is this the first time?
No, I have done it before.
And your net worth is in the millions?
Yes.
Okay.
Let's explain for the rest of the listeners. Let's explain what angel investing is.
It's when companies they're still so small they can't get venture capital. Is what
correct.
It is.
They are
still an idea.
Yeah, they are in their absolute infancy. Or even sometimes pre-birth.
Yeah.
An angel investor is someone, and it's normally, you know, they call it friends and family, and oftentimes when you invest, you're friends and family, and when the company falls apart, you are no longer friends or
so,
family.
So is your question, should you have your own C Corp to make these investments, or should it really depends on what your long term plan is. So, because you could have an S Corp as well. You can set up an LLC. There's different type of structures. What do you think would be the benefit of the C Corp?
Yeah, that's what I'm working through. Why a C Corp?
Unless you want to gift these, unless what you're investing you'd like to gift in the future through charitable, through a trust or something. Then a C Corp may be more beneficial to another structure. But what would be the benefit of a C Corp?
Someone mentioned that at a meeting yesterday, and I thought, well, I've just been treating them as investments through my own personal account. And they said, well, there's some benefits in C Corp, such as some liability protection if you're involved directly.
Okay.
So how much money are you investing? How much money do you have invested right now in angel companies?
Oh, probably $600,000 or $700,000.
Wow, you're a player. You're a player, Mary.
I don't. Are you involved in? Are you working in the companies or on the board of directors of these companies?
Sometimes.
Well, you should have board of directors insurance, and I'm sure you have that. That's a start.
Yeah.
I don't know if how much this would help you. A C corp.
You could do an S corp. Yeah. Or an LLC is going to give you the same sort of.
Yeah, the C corp.
If something is your. I mean, then if it comes down to you acting in a specific manner, then they might be able to break the corporate shell and come after you anyway. But that's why you would have D&O insurance.
I don't see any benefit in a C corp.
I wouldn't do a C corp.
I would look at an LLC at that level.
It's the problem with a C corp that you're subject to double taxation.
Yeah. But we
most small companies are S corp.
You and I, we own a company together that does, you know, non traditional investing.
An LLC,
and it's in an LLC.
Yeah.
So if what did we do? Scott and I own a corporation that is outside of Hanson McLean. We own it together. That does, you know, little.
We own a corporation. It's a way of holding company essentially for a variety of things. It makes it simpler in one LLC.
Yes. It is a corporation, though. It's called a limited liability corporation.
All right.
But that's just not to make us sound like big shots. It's just
it's
a way
not
to.
Like there's a big building there that says
Pat and Scott.
A very large corporation.
Yeah. So I would look at an LLC or an S corporation, but not most certainly not a C corp.
And the difference is S corp and LLC, any of the tax implications it flows through to your tax return. So. You're not subject to double taxation. A C corp, you'd be subject to a double taxation.
Yeah, you could be subject to a double taxation. So that's what we did.
And I have a feeling whoever mentioned something probably wasn't an attorney or accountant, probably learned something from a seminar or something. There are some people out there that talk about how to use your retirement account to fund businesses, and they encourage people to set up a C corp because that's the only way you can do it. We're not big fans of that whole strategy, but that's where I hear sometimes people will mention the C corp because it's.
But we personally use an LLC for this type of investing. All righty.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Good luck in your endeavors and all those things. Yeah.
Good for her.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There's risk. Angel investing is about as.
How much in angel investing did you do?
How much have I done or how much do I do now? None.
Yeah, me too.
No. In fact.
Because you've done some.
In fact.
Yeah, it takes a. Look.
You got to be involved. You got to sit on the. Like Mary does. You got to.
It takes not only. So when someone hits me up, first of all, let's back up for a second.
I was hit up last week.
If you look at venture funds, they invest in startup companies that are typically a little further along. At least something's going on. You talk to a venture. Someone in the venture business, they say they expect out of 10 investments to make nothing on 7 of them.
Flat out.
Seriously.
And they're involved.
Nothing on 70% of them. They figure 2 will be pretty good and 1 they'll hit a home run on. So they're successful if out of 10 investments, 1 of them's a home run and 2 of them do okay and the rest go bust. So If you're gonna do these things, you really need to be involved in many of them,
and you actually have to be involved. These are venture firms that normally have great analytics staffs behind them. They have market research. They take board seats. They're involved. They understand the business, and they typically work in a vertical market, which means either in their technology or manufacturing, so that they understand the space they're in
really well,
very very well.
Yeah,
so it is risky.
Yeah. And you were hit up. So people,
I got hit up last week. A guy, a friend, one of them. I got a bunch of kids. And so you have these social networks where you're running. You're not like buddies. You're not hanging out together.
Yeah,
the guy. You know, like, how's the weather?
I don't expect you to have friends. You could just say an acquaintance. That's fine.
Okay. Thank you. I don't have any friends. Yeah. Acquaintance. And wants me to sign an NDA, which is called a non-disclosure agreement.
I laugh when someone says, "Let me have you sign this NDA." I say, "I'm not signing an NDA."
Yeah, that's actually what I texted.
That's what he said.
I texted back. He said,
"Why am I going to sign something to
exposes me to liability.
Yes.
when you call me and I have absolutely no interest
and
in it.
And a non-disclosure agreement basically says whatever he tells you, you're not going to disclose to anybody. So
you might already be doing it yourself.
All of a sudden he's saying, I'm going to tell you something, but you have to promise to keep it a secret.
So
and I don't. Someone tells me, I don't know if I can. So depends what you tell. I don't may or may not be able to keep it a secret. So don't tell me.
I text him back. No, I'm not going to sign a non-disclosure agreement. But and then naturally a day later, hey, can we talk? And then non-disclosure.
So part of it
I'm glad I talked to him because he was going to invest in a company, and I told him absolutely not. You should not invest.
So I have some friends sometimes that'll and sometimes
now you
ideas.
Have friends, but I'm not allowed to have friends.
That's correct. So though, my response is typically look. Here's why I don't do these things. It's not, I said, you might have this might be a great idea and it might have legs. It might work. My personal experience is that things never go according to plan. Whatever the plan is in business, it never goes according to plan. There's always some deviation and there's always adjustments. So you're asking for me for my money today for an investment. If I give you my money, what ends up happening? Down the road, when things quite aren't going to plan, suddenly you're going to need input, or I'm going to want to provide input because I've got my money at stake.
And now I've got a part-time job.
Now
right?
I've got, that's exactly it. Now I've got time involved in it as well.
Well, it's not going to take any time. Look, if I invest in your company and my money's going south and I think that there's a way for me to actually get that money back or a return on it, I'm going to be involved. And what's involvement mean?
Time.
Yeah, and which means I'm doing research on the space. I'm talking to your employees. I'm talking to vendors. I'm trying to figure it out. I don't want that as part of my life. I got a company.
That's what I tell them. It's like I don't need any more headaches.
Yeah,
I value my time more right now than
yeah. So when your best friend,
that's the beauty. Frankly, that's one of the beauties of the financial markets. They've got their downside too, right? So you can see the stock ticker going all the time. You see what happened to interest rates all the time.
But it's passive. You're not out. General Motors isn't calling you and asking you what you think.
Never. Nor is the S&P 500 index fund.
Never calls. I've owned the S&P 500 for over 20 years. I've never received a single phone call from the
never.
S&P 500. Which just means passive.
Yeah.
But angel investing, startup, venture investing, much more difficult.
Yeah. And people can make money. You just need to realize what you're getting into. 1-888-2-HANSEN if you want to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters and join either myself or Pat answering your call. 1-888-2-HANSON. And we are in Northern California with Bob. Bob, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hello. Question for you guys is my wife will be retiring soon from the state and she'll have a pretty nice pension. And so we're toying with the idea of buying a house and establishing residency in another state. Mm-hmm. And but the thing is, we'd like to keep our home here in Sacramento.
Okay.
And so I was wondering if there's any pitfalls as far as franchise tax board, that sort of thing, what to look for.
You have to actually be out of the state.
The majority of the time. Doesn't mean you can't spend time here.
But it can't be a sham. And they will catch you if you're...
Although I was talking to a CPA recently, and he talked about some quite high rollers that he said surprisingly have not been audited. He's like, I'm amazed that the Franchise Tax Board in some of these cases haven't even come knocking.
I was talking to someone that has a home in both California and in Nevada, and what they have done is actually have, even though Nevada is the primary residence, why wouldn't Nevada? Nevada's state income tax free at this point in time. They actually allocate some of their income back to the state of California.
So they don't get audited.
Just kind of.
They must spend a lot of time in California.
They spend quite a bit of time in California.
So here's the... I mean, basically, Bob, if your plan is to actually leave California but keep a place here, that there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
And you can clearly do that, and you could avoid taxation on your pension and any other income you've got. But it has to be the majority of the time.
To be real. You register your cars in that place, get your mail there, register to vote. If you have a library card, get a library card there.
Library.
Sure. And then once your driver's license, own a home, all that sort of thing out of state, and then we won't have to even file for taxes, California taxes at all.
Most likely you will not have to file for California taxes.
Unless you own like a rental in California or something like that.
But you don't have to buy a home to do it. You can rent a home in that place. You just have to be a resident. Let me ask a couple questions. Where are you thinking of moving to?
Alabama.
Okay. And have you spent any time in Alabama?
Not enough yet, just a little bit.
Okay. So go and spend some time there before you move. There.
Sure.
Maybe go rent a place
for a month
or even a year, lease the house
for a season or two.
Sure. We've seen enough people.
Oh yes.
Over the years. Here's this dream they've always thought of retirement. They retire, they go there, and it's like, it's not really what we thought.
It's terrible for them. I've seen people reverse their decisions in less than 6 months because they actually didn't really, you know, going someplace on vacation is one thing, right? Because you're on vacation, but living there is completely different. And so you want to go back and live there. And there's nothing wrong with renting a place for a year.
I agree with you 100%. Yeah. I agree with that.
Yeah. And Alabama's a beautiful country.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
So no property tax for seniors and low income tax.
Yeah. Yep. So you shouldn't have any problems with taxes if you do it the right way.
It's just the odd the odd hurricane now and then.
But
I remember, Pat, I was in Alabama and I was in Alabama and I said, take me to like the most authentic lunch place you can. And it was like this buffet. Everything was fried.
Oh.
I just fried this, fried that, fried. And then, and I'm not knocking on Alabamans.
Sounds like it.
Well, a little bit. And then they said, don't miss out on the dessert table. Oh, so I go to the dessert table. It's this big tray of vanilla pudding with vanilla wafers laid on top.
Oh, like when you were a kid.
Yeah, like a family potluck or something, right? And it was actually a very enjoyable lunch.
Was it? Did you have fun?
I had a blast. It was great. And that's my Alabama experience.
That's very nice. Thank you.
Thank you, Pat.
Thank you.
And let's turn now to Bill in New York. Bill, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hello. How are you?
Wonderful, Bill. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for taking my call, as they say. So my question is, in my retirement account, I'm heading into be 66 in a few months, and I'm looking to scale back working, as well as my wife. I have a split of 45% equity funds, 45% bond funds, and about 10% cash. And by the time I get to the end of the year, I'm going to move more into cash, like 20% or so.
From what side? From the bond fund, from the stock fund, or from both?
Probably from both.
Okay.
Okay. And so I'm just wondering, with the, aged bull market and everything else, if you think that this is a good position for me to be in. And, where should I go if differently from that?
Can you afford your lifestyle with a new allocation?
No. I have a condo here in New York, and I have a condo down in Florida.
Of course you do. Of course you do. You know, can I ask you a quick question? Aside, here's what I've always been confused about.
Yes.
So New Yorkers, that you live in a high rise in New York City, and then you want your vacation home to be in another high rise.
Well, it's not exactly like that. I'm in the suburbs of New York, and I'm only on the third floor.
All right. Well, then that changes.
All right,
my
low rise,
thing.
A low rise, and your condo's in a low rise, but that's okay.
But I'm perplexed by that. I figure if I live in the city, I'd want, like, anyway.
What kind of a percentage? What kind of distribution do you plan on taking from your account as a percentage in retirement?
Well, that's of course, interesting thing. My wife is 5 years younger, so she can't really tap her Social Security, and she has a small pension. So I'm really concerned about this transition phase over the next 5 years. You know, when she gets to the point of Social Security and stuff like that, we'll be home free, I believe. But I'm afraid of, you know, running through like $500,000, taking distributions out, and also, you know, having the market crash at the same time.
So you're going to start a distribution. What percentage are you going to start distribution? So for the rest of the listeners, I think what Bill said was he's going to start with a higher distribution until his wife goes on Social Security, and then you're going to lower it. Is that correct?
Yeah, and, you know, my plan is maybe going to my plan is trying to work out something part-time with my current company.
Got it. Great.
So your distribution is going to be 5%, 6%, 4% to
10%,
start?
10%, 12%?
Well, I know it's supposed to be 4%, but I have a feeling it'll be higher than that.
And once she retires, do you think you'll be able to swing a 4% distribution?
Yes.
So here's the one way to look at it is to say, what cash do we need set aside to bridge us to Social Security, right? And that portion, just carve off your portfolio, stick in a separate account, and plan on spending that down over the, you know, 4 to 5 year period, whatever that time frame is, right? So, and not really calling it part of your portfolio, just having that in cash or some short-term bonds. The rest of the portfolio, part of my concern is that age 66, if you move to a 35% equity allocation because you're expecting a decline in the markets, what happens if the decline doesn't come for 5 years?
And what happens if the markets actually just go flat and the dividends that the markets pay out are equal to what the bonds would be yielding on a cash portfolio, or what cash would be yielding? Because markets don't necessarily have to fall. They can go flat for a period of time. And a well-diversified portfolio will actually be yielding more than you would in a cash account. So a 20% pullback on the portfolio into cash seems a tad bit aggressive to me. Scott?
Yeah, unless that 20% is the money you want to earmark to help bridge to Social Security. But it sounds, to be real frank with you, it sounds like a lot of money to be earmarking for a five-year period. And what year, how old would you be starting Social Security for your wife?
Well, the wife is 60. Wouldn't you say the wife is 61, right? You said you're 66 and
right.
And she's 5 years
right.
younger. So she's 61. So she's only a year away from Social Security.
If she wanted to get a reduced amount.
If she wanted to take a reduced amount.
Which she's not interested in doing.
And what do you owe anything on your condos?
Nothing here, but 175 at 3% in Florida.
I don't see anything, but, you know, I don't see a big problem if you're that uncomfortable with the market pulling back a little bit into cash. But
the challenge is, when are you going to feel comfortable? Very few people feel comfortable in the middle of a financial downturn about increasing their allocations.
I understand that. But my point being, it's excessive,
I think, to have a third of the portfolio.
You would what?
I would feel comfortable.
What'd you do 9 years
ago? In a downturn. Well, I was fully invested then.
You were fully invested through the whole thing?
And never sold out, yeah.
Well, you know, 70-30.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you're a pretty seasoned investor, and you're glad you've stayed the course, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
As painful as it was.
Increasing it. Yes. Yes.
I don't know if I would. I don't know if I would have a third of my portfolio in cash.
Not only that, it's 66.
You got a lot of years left.
61. You have a long life expectancy.
Especially if you move to Florida, you'll live to be like 100. Everyone in Florida lives to be 100.
Sure. Well, you know, I'm not sure that I can withstand this lifestyle based on how things are. So eventually I'm thinking, I'm not sure when, in a year or two or whatever, I would sell the place in New York, which doesn't have a mortgage.
Got it. You're in good shape.
And then I'd have, you know, less expenses and more kids.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that it 30% in cash is a little excessive. But you know, if you wanted to 20%, yeah, you know, you're not. We're never going to time the market. You're not going to time it.
Right.
So what you're trying to do is a little bit of risk mitigation.
And if it helps you feel more comfortable as you go into this transition of trying to figure out part time work, then frankly, we don't really have a problem with it
at all.
Yeah. So
and
anyway,
just bring it down to 20% in cash.
Yeah. Glad you called, Bill. Unfortunately, the clock is ticking, and we're going to hit a take a quick break here. But anyway, if you want to join Hanson McLean, 1-888-2-Hanson is the number to be part of the program. 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, that number is 1-888-242-6766. Myself and my co-host, we are both financial advisors. Certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. Just means we're practicing advisors, practicing financial advisors, working with people like yourself throughout the week, and we are here on the weekends to be your financial advisor on the air. We come to you each week during the same time on the same radio program, so you can listen to us that way. You can also get a podcast of this program. And if you like this podcast, you listen to it, let your friends know about it as well. We'd appreciate that. And when we come back, we'll continue with some calls. Plus, we'll have a real advice segment. Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Stick around for more.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
Again, to join the program, 1-888-2-HANSON. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766. And I got to tell you, Pat, I can certainly tell school, the colleges are back in because traffic becomes different. My commute is much different with these college students back in.
Yeah, yeah. So our corporate headquarters is located close to a
university.
But I got to tell you, Scott, this is a big change for us at the McLean household. My third is in college. I've got one left at home. So the three of us sit around the table talking.
Oh.
And the poor 16-year-old is not liking this much. There is a little bit too much attention being paid to him. He is not liking it
and
at all.
Is he the one that...
free-spirited?
Yeah, there's a good way to put it.
Yeah, he's a nice kid, but he
doesn't play quite within the confines of what mom and dad might always want.
Maybe. But he keeps a low profile. He tries to fly under the radar. He's smart like that. So talking about college, I came across this article that has, maybe it has a little bit to do with money, but I found it actually fascinating about colleges. So there's 18 million.
It has a lot to do because we see people sacrifice their own financial stability to shove their kids through college.
That's a good point.
A lot of it.
Okay. So there's 18 million undergrads in the United States. So an undergrad obviously is if they're junior college or
someone in university that has yet
university.
To graduate.
40% go to community college. So 60% go to a four-year university. Over half of all undergrads live at home or living with their parents. Half of them. I actually never realized it was that high. Did you? Half of the undergrads
lived
at home.
I went to junior college right out of high school, and I lived at home for a couple of years. I didn't have an option to go to a university. I didn't want to take on any student loans, and they were different back then anyway.
Yeah. I moved out. But
now you see kids go into $80,000 Hawk to go get a...
Well, that I don't think... Oh, got it. Yes, you see some. A quarter of all undergraduates are older than 25 years of age. That's the thing that shocked me the most. And the same number are single parents.
Yeah, my oldest sister got her degree at age 40.
She did?
Yeah. She got a degree, she was going to be a teacher, got a degree, couldn't get a job, and now she's a compliance manager for a utility company. But she would have never gotten that job. She wouldn't have gotten that position without
a four-year degree.
Yeah. I mean, the reality is,
you need a four-year degree to get a lot of jobs nowadays.
A certified financial planner designation, which I hold, you can't get a certified financial planner designation today without a college degree.
So
it is clearly
it's a changing environment.
But I do think
I had a dinner with a college president 6 or 8 weeks ago, small private college. We're just talking about the future. I think the future of secondary education, or is that what we call it, college, is changing.
Oh, how it's delivered?
The whole experience. Why 4 years? I mean, the whole thing.
Yeah, why 4 years?
I mean, a lot of these colleges were like seminaries at one point in time. Most of them were liberal arts type of university. Now it's, anyway, we'll see what happens in the future. I find it fascinating. But you, what you don't want to do is jeopardize your entire...
So your kid could go to, actually, they talk about Ivy Leagues. Actually, less than 0.4% of all students goes to Ivy League.
Yeah.
I don't even know. I know some kids.
My kid applied to a few of them. My son.
Did he?
No, he didn't get into any of them. No. It's fine. He applied to MIT. He's a smart kid, but he's not brilliant. And
they laughed?
No, they didn't laugh. But I remember having a conversation. I'm like, Blake, if you get into MIT, think who you're competing against.
You'll be buried.
This isn't Oak Ridge High.
Yeah,
any
you'll
longer.
Be buried.
I mean, you half the students are below average.
Yeah.
So you've been, you know.
Yeah, you want to, listen, you want to, I want to swim in a pool where I'm the best.
Tijuana U. I mean, something along those lines.
I want to get something that is really lowbrow so I stand out.
Okay.
Is that what you're telling your son? Yes.
No, but I remember it was actually Malcolm Gladwell, who I think is a brilliant writer.
Yes, yes.
In one of his books, he had a whole chapter on this, and I found, and I think there was a 60 Minutes special on it years ago, and it resonated very well with me.
Yeah.
I thought, because my kids thought, if you go to a school where you're going to struggle to keep up with the rest, what's that do for you emotionally if you have 4 years of that experience as well?
Yeah.
Where you're always struggling just to keep up with the pack. And how's that going to lead to when you're...
How did it affect you?
What do you mean?
When you were struggling to keep up with the pack, how did it affect you emotionally?
Glad you find that so funny.
All right, let's go back to the call.
I actually had a little business when I was in college. And
I know. You did okay, Scott.
All right.
One, for yourself.
1-888-2-HANSEN to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Let's talk with Mike in Colorado. Mike, you're with Hanson McLean.
Gentlemen, it's a pleasure to speak with you.
Likewise. Thanks for joining the program, Mike.
What can we do for you?
Well, about 5 years ago or so, we jumped on the precious metals bandwagon. My wife and I put $50,000 into precious metal ETFs. And, of course, as everyone knows, precious metals have not done too well since then. We're down about, the $50,000 has turned into about $30,000. And I'm not looking for that to change a whole lot anytime soon. And since my wife's only about a year away from retirement, we're trying to look at something better to do with that money.
What's the rest of your savings look like, savings and investments?
We recently purchased a $90,000 annuity, which we'll begin withdrawing on in about 2 years. We have a house that's about half paid for, so we've probably got $250,000 in equity there. Not much in savings.
What's your mortgage balance?
Mortgage balance is about $175,000.
And how old are you?
I'm 73. My wife is 63.
And you're retired?
I'm retired, yes.
Is the income you're going to get off the $90,000 an annuity? More than the portion of the mortgage payment of the equivalent amount?
No, not on a monthly basis.
So how much will this annuity be generating for you on a monthly basis?
It's going to be generating about $7,500 a year. So divide that by 12.
And is that if you annuitize it? Is that based on a single life or a joint with your wife?
Oh, it's single. I'm the beneficiary.
Okay, so if you actually go to annuitize it, unless...
That's wrong.
What's wrong? The numbers?
It's a 12. Yeah, that's wrong.
Yeah, I mean...
I don't actually believe the numbers that on an immediate annuitization.
Unless it's based on his own life, single life.
He's the beneficiary, said. So it can't be the both the annuitant and the beneficiary. It would make
who's
her,
the annuitant?
It would make your wife the annuitant.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. So those numbers that you just gave, the $7,500 a year, which is a little over $600 a month, based on a 63-year-old, that doesn't sound right to me. I think those are inflated. I just question that number.
If it's based on a 63-year-old
female. If it's based on a 63-year-old female. So I would go back and look at that annuity contract, because what you just described, an immediate annuitization.
What do you think you should do?
Well, let me clarify one thing before I say that. Well, I think I ought to get rid of the precious metals, the ETFs. But in terms of the annuity, it's one of those that it's payable for the life of my wife, and then the full amount is still payable upon her death, or my death, should the case may be, and then it's our heirs can get it.
Yeah, what they call is probably sounds something like this: a life and period certain.
Or cash refund.
Or yeah, but the numbers that a $90,000 deposit into that with on a 63-year-old is what I am questioning the validity of that monthly payment. It just doesn't sound right to me. It doesn't sound right to me. But what you should do
lower,
with that person?
Sound low or high?
It's high.
Well, it's over an 8% annuitization
on 63. It's high.
Yeah, it sounds a lot. It's deferred in the future, not in the past.
So. The precious metals.
How's cash flow for you guys? What other income do you have?
Well, her income at the time, I've got Social Security and a pension. We probably together, once she retires, won't have enough to make a house payment that we currently have, which is about $1,400.
And your pension, should you, let's say you were hit by a truck tomorrow, would it continue to for your spouse or would it cease?
Yes, she continues to get it.
All right.
The answer to your question on that ETF is yes, you should get rid of it. You should get rid of it. And if you don't have any cash reserves, I would actually just leave it in cash. That's what that would be my recommendation.
I
wouldn't reinvest it. I would leave it in cash. And then I would look at the overall situation. So are you questioning whether you're going to stay in the same home or not in retirement?
We are looking at selling the home and buying something cheaper in an area of the country that has a lower cost of living.
Got it.
Perfect. 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 I was hoping you would say that. I was hoping because it,
okay.
And the reason is
because if
you could stay
in
that home, you could stay in that home, but it's going to be a struggle. It will be every month will be a struggle. And if you could get into a home where the house is paid for,
do you have family close to you?
No, 600 miles or so.
Okay. All right. So it's not like your kids live, in the next town over and you'd be changing.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you can downsize.
All over the country.
Perfect. Perfect. If you can get to a lower cost, area than where you're at now and get that house, paid for, your retirement will be much, much more comfortable.
Yep. And I agree with Pat. I would, liquidate the position on the precious metal and, I just keep that in cash, particularly you're about to transition into retirement.
And I would go back and look at that annuity to verify that $7,500 a year. I hope I'm wrong.
Unless it was bought a while ago.
You said it was bought a couple years, 2 years ago, right?
It was bought a couple years ago, and they're going to wait a couple more years before it.
I question it. I hope I'm wrong, Scott, but I most certainly would question it.
Well, and Mike, we appreciate the call. The question thing I look at is why would you buy an annuity when you have a mortgage payment at this stage?
Yes.
Right?
Well, you know the answer.
They were sold.
It was sold. It was the annuity was sold to them. So I would just.
I had a friend of mine who said to me, I was running with him because I. And he says to me, he listened to our program, and he said to me, Scott, I know you guys don't really like annuities. Why would someone buy an annuity? I said, no one buys an annuity. I said, what do you mean? I said, people are sold an annuity. Nobody goes out and buys an annuity. They get sold an annuity. People go out and buy other investments, but I don't know many people who get. Look, every once in a while.
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
And what was his response?
Oh, he didn't. Whatever. He has no desire for it. But,
oh. All right. Yeah. Well, so I would just question that annuity. Yeah.
To be part of the program, call 1-888-2-HANSON. 1-888-2-HANSON. We're in Sacramento with Marilyn. Marilyn, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi.
Hi, Marilyn.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I love your show. I think of it as like Google for financial questions.
Oh, well, thank you.
Wow. Thank you. That's a compliment.
We think of ourselves as Bing for financial questions, though. So,
or what was the original one? Anyway.
I have a duplex that I purchased in the early 80s, and I want to sell it. I'm tired of the rental in business.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, and my tax situation is going to be terrible. And I'm just wondering, is there any kind of option I have other than just to any kind of investment option that I have to defer some of these taxes or something?
Yes, there are. But sometimes the options are actually worse than paying the taxes.
Oh, I think I know where you're going.
Okay. I mean, so you can clearly do an exchange on what's the duplex worth?
I'd say $375 to $400.
All right, let's call it $375. And you've bought it since the early 80s, so let's assume your tax basis is very low because you depreciate. You paid a lot less for it. You depreciated it. So
absolutely, yeah.
Let's assume your cost basis is $75,000. Just so you have roughly $300,000. I'm going to just make a numbers up, but it's somewhere ballpark. So you have roughly $300,000 of capital gain that you would pay if you sold this.
Right.
You'd have to report $300,000 of capital gain. The maximum federal rate's 20%. State of California, for the wonderful privilege of living in this state that you do, is going to whack you with another probably 9%, 9.3% on this.
So you're talking about a third. So you can do a tax-free exchange into another property.
You might have alternative minimum tax smack you too, but a third, roughly a third is going to be gone.
But you can do a tax-free exchange into another property. You can do a tax-free exchange into what's called a tenants in common. Of which we don't see many of them now. We saw a lot
don't
in 2006 and 2007.
That's why your partners with people you don't even know.
They were terrible. They were awful.
But it can be structured. If you had three other friends that were all in the same situation and said, let's hire someone to manage a
but
property.
But you still have the property. I mean, so do you not want, are you retired or close to retirement?
I'm retired.
Okay.
And here's what we saw people. So I don't know what your... I don't know what this duplex is worth at the bottom of the market a decade ago, 9 years ago, right? But we did see a lot of people at the top of the market, didn't want to pay the tax, exchanged for a new property. The new property fell in value by more than they would have paid in taxes. So we don't have a crystal ball.
Right.
We don't know what the future is going to be.
Do you, you don't want to be in property at all anymore, correct, Marilyn?
No, it's, you know, you think when you're retired, you'll have more time to do.
All right, so let me ask you this. Will your life change at all if you walk away with $275,000 in cash post deal, or you were in a new property and didn't pay the taxes from a cash flow standpoint to the house? Is your life still going to change?
No.
Well, then
pay the tax.
Pay the tax.
So Scott, I'm going to share a quick story. So this client's hardworking. Family, they came in, they were 65, and he said, I'm going to retire, and this is our net worth, and we've owned these 15 properties for this amount of years, and we're going to continue to manage them. Oh, by, and they're fourplexes, some of them, so we have the wash machines in it to take the quarters, and he goes out and repairs it himself, and he was telling me how they're going to travel, and they're going to buy a second home in the mountains when they retire, and they had the net worth to do it. And I said, that'd be great. I said, so who's going to drive home to fix the wash machines and take care of the properties and tell me about this great retirement? Because you don't have a passive investment and you have an active investment. So
right.
If your goal is to die with as much money as possible, then if it makes sense to sell it, then exchange to another property and continue.
But
managing.
I would sell
it. That will ensure you'll have the highest probability of a high net worth when you die. If your objective is to have a great, enjoy some life for the years that you've got ahead of you and you're sick of this, then if it were me, I'd sell it and pay the tax and move on.
Got it.
Just pay
that's
it and move on.
Clear.
All right, good.
All righty.
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, sure. Good luck. Good luck to you, Marilyn. All right, thanks.
And sell it quickly. Don't.
Yeah, this is a hot market.
This is a hot market.
Yeah, a lot of
people are stretching for yield.
Yep.
We don't know how long it's going to go on, but.
Don't get too greedy.
Yep. Just sell it quickly.
Pigs get fed, hogs get slaughtered. I don't quite know what that means, but.
But it's an old Wall Street term that no one knows what it means.
Well, don't be too piggish.
Yeah.
Or it can, you know, yeah. You never have. And now let's talk real advice. This is a segment we do periodically on Hanson McLean's Money Matters, where we talk with one of our own advisors and hear a situation, a story of, you might say, of someone we encountered and how that advisor had helped this person navigate through whatever they were facing. And today we've got Lori Cairo, and Lori is a certified fund specialist, got over 20 years working in the financial services and been with Hanson McLean. I don't know how many. Lori, how many years have you been with Hanson McLean?
Scott, before we go on, we have to give the disclaimer. Your experience with an advisor, Hanson McLean, may or may not be different than the one Lori will be describing today.
Yes. Lori, welcome to Hanson McLean.
Hi, thank you for having me.
How many years have you been with us? A long time.
Seven and a half.
And a half. Is a half, is that a good thing, or is that and a half?
That's a good thing.
Okay, good. What's he going to tell you?
No.
I know. That's why I'm
hardly wait.
Hey, do you like me as a boss? Oh, what do you think of me, actually?
Yeah. Pleasure.
I'll tell you what I think of me.
All right, Lori, tell us about a situation you encountered.
Okay. Well, you know, I was thinking and, you know, what I wanted to share today, and, you know, we put a lot of time into retirement planning and doing that process, right, for a lot of clients. But I really realized that there's a lot of situations that aren't retirement related, right, and doing that planning process with clients where we can help and where we manage, you know, trust assets. And we work with either the successor trustee, which could be, a child or of the grantors, and we can help navigate that process of moving into that role, what the responsibility is, and how to manage money and manage assets in that situation. So about 5 years ago, we had I had an appointment with a client, and she was a first-time caller to the radio program, and that's how she, happened upon meeting with me. But she was moved into the role of conservator for her brother, who was disabled, and by reason of her mother had passed away, who had filled that role for a long time. And
so, Lori, for the rest of the listeners, could you briefly describe the conservator's role?
Sure. Well, the conservator is the responsible person, or the named as conservator, to care for another adult, and that person is the conservatee, who isn't able to either care for themselves or manage their own finances.
And so, and oftentimes it will actually go beyond just finances. It comes down to paying bills and helping find a place to live and medical care and the whole bit in many cases. Okay.
Exactly. Right. So in her situation, her mother had filled that role for her brother. Her brother was disabled in an accident, and so he isn't able to, care for herself or make the financial decisions. And once her mother had passed, she has three other siblings, but she was the sibling that was put into the role of being conservator, a trustee of his trust assets, and to, meet with the attorney and go to court.
I'm sure she loved that opportunity.
Well, she's a great client, and she really, embraced the role. I mean, she wanted to learn. She wanted to make sure she was doing the right thing for her brother. She, immediately came in with statements and looking at the investments that she was now managing for her brother. And we had to identify, first of all, risk. And she came to us because we're a fiduciary, and she wanted to be sure that, she was doing, filling her responsibility and making sure she was making sure this money's managed appropriately for her brother. Some people in retirement worry about running out of money, but she wanted to make sure that her brother doesn't run out of money for, his care.
Okay.
What are the risks? What are the concerns does she have?
Well, she had mostly concerns just about the investments. They were in some mutual funds with a number of different companies. She wanted to kind of consolidate those assets, and then she wanted to look at risk. I mean, the portfolio was about 78% equity, 22% fixed income. So completed a risk questionnaire for her and looked at really what level of risk that they needed in this portfolio. We ended up in a conservative strategy for him, but we also had to go through the process of meeting with the attorney and CPA and petitioning to the court for the change in investment management
assets
so that Hanson McLean could manage those assets.
Oh, is that right?
Because it was structured some other way.
The conservator didn't have the ability to change the asset management firm.
No, it had to be specifically indicated by
70-some-odd percent for a disabled person.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Right.
Pretty high
so,
equity allocation.
So,
right.
So, Lori, do you know, I met with a professional trustee last week, and they said that oftentimes the trust will allow them discretion on actually managing.
It depends how it's all written.
How it's written.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's so important to have these things written where you have, you want to make sure you're comfortable. Where you don't want the discretion, you have it written that way. And those areas where you want to allow some, you need to have it written that way as well. Important the way it's
right.
Drafted.
Well, they have to actually prepare a budget and the budget submitted to the court for the amount of distribution from the trust that we, you know, facilitate to the bank account on a monthly basis. So that's set by the court. So she doesn't have discretion to pull money out on her own, you know, any amount that she wants. So that's, you know, typically set. But in this case, we had to write out what the recommended strategy was, the types of funds and how we, you know, what we use to manage money here, our management agreement and our fee schedule and so forth. And then we also had to provide the RIA and fiduciary documentation in order to change that relationship.
Wow. And this conservator took it very seriously. Well, actually, thank you for that. That we appreciate that. And it's
Lori,
it's timely. This last week, I had breakfast with a professional trustee. Some are court appointed and some are actually trust appointed. And the difference is the planning when, that took
the planning place, that took place.
The planning that took place.
If planning is taking place ahead of time, then you don't have to petition the court every time. If planning is taking place after the need arises,
then oftentimes you have to petition.
I'm just
the court.
Thinking this disabled brother. He's fortunate to have a family that cares for him, and fortunate to have some financial assets that help provide for his needs.
In fact, this trustee was telling me that. That their firm has some clients as they get older in age, just don't want the day-to-day responsibility of all the bill paying and everything else that goes with it and the asset management. So they hire a fiduciary to do that. Or a child, if there's multiple children in the family and they don't get along, it's best to hire
absolutely.
Just a fiduciary.
Well, of course. How often do you have to talk to clients about that sort of thing? Something?
Yeah.
Sometimes we have a family member with special needs, and having the right kind of planning with a special needs trust set up ahead of time makes sense. Sometimes just the right kind of our own planning. There might be a time when one of us personally has a incapacitated and needs someone else to make decisions on our behalf. Anyway, we are out of time on this program, unfortunately. We come to you each week during the same time at this on the same radio program, so you can listen to us that way. You can also get a podcast of this program. And if you like this podcast, you listen to it, let your friends know about it as well. We'd appreciate that. And anyway, we're out of time. This has been Hanson McLean's Money Matters. We'll see you next week.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.